Please be seated. The afternoon oral argument for this panel, In Re Manhattan West Mechanics Lien Litigation, APCO Construction et al. Versus Scott Financial Corporation et al. Real Parties in Interest, case number 61131. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes,
Your
Honor.
Okay.
You are, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Kovner.
Thank you, Your Honor. I reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please.
Okay.
Your Honors, I'd like to first start by thanking Justice Cherry, Justice Hardesty, and Justice Douglas for giving us this time today. The issue before this court is a determination of the priority between two groups of lien holders. The first group is the mechanics lien holders, who began work on the Manhattan West project in April of 2007. The second group that is subject to this priority determination is the construction lenders, who recorded their construction deed of trust on February 7, 2008, over 8 months after the commencement of construction of this project. This case arose because the construction lenders and the mezzanine lenders, with full knowledge that construction had been ongoing for over 8 months prior to the recording of the deed of trust, entered into and recorded a mezzanine deed of trust subordination agreement. And pursuant to that subordination agreement, the mezzanine deed of trust moved behind the lien of the construction deed of trust. The construction lenders knew at the time that they would be behind the mechanics lien lenders and took steps to protect themselves by obtaining a policy of insurance over mechanics lien. It's due to, and it was, the facts are undisputed, but they were due to the fact that this was a subordination agreement that changed priority. And in fact, because of the subordination agreement, they were required to fill out a construction loss of priority questionnaire in order to obtain that certificate of entitlement, excuse me, the insurance. The construction lenders further protected themselves by obtaining a guarantee of the construction loan. Now, when the district court considered the priority issue between the mechanics liens and the construction lenders, the district court erred as a matter of law by treating the recorded mezzanine deeds of trust subordination agreement as an agreement of subrogation and finding that the agreement elevated the lien of the, construction lenders and leapfrogged the lien of the mechanics lien holders. This holding misapplied the very definition of subordination. Now, as stated by the Alabama Supreme Court in Am South Bank versus JB Finance, the subordinating party agrees that its lien will be in a lower priority than a lien is being subordinated to. Now, Judge Delaney, who was the original judge on this case, initially found that the subordination agreement did just that. And after the case was reassigned, Judge Scan's order continued to acknowledge that the subordination agreement moved the lien of the mezzanine deeds of trust, holding that the mezzanine deed of trust is junior in priority to both the construction deed of trust and the mechanics liens. However, Judge Scan went farther and allowed the construction lenders to jump over the priority of the mechanics lien claimants and take the priority formerly held by the mezzanine deed of trust. Subrogation, as opposed to subordination, is defined as the substitution of one party in place of another as it relates to a claim. And that is the effect that the court's order has had in this case. Now, consistent with the meaning of subordination, the subordination agreement expressly changed the priority of the mezzanine deeds of trust and gives public notice that the lien and the debt secured by that lien are to be treated as if the mezzanine deed of trust was recorded after the construction deed of trust. Specifically, the first paragraph of the agreement in the subordination agreement specifically addresses lien priority. And it states the lien of the $110 million senior debt deed of trust and the indebtedness secured thereby shall in all respects be deemed prior to the lien of the mezzanine deed of trust and the debt secured thereby, as though the mezzanine deed of trust as though the mezzanine deed of trust was recorded subsequent to the recordation of the $110 million senior deed of trust. By their own recorded document, the construction lenders and the mezzanine deeds of trust holders have given public notice that in all respects, the lien of the mezzanine deed of trust is to be deemed as if it was recorded after the lien of the construction deed of trust. And, Your Honors, in briefing this matter, Scott has admitted as much. Now, Your Honors, this is just a blow-up of page 7 of Scott's brief in this matter. And there are two things to note about this page. First, Scott admits that as a result of the subordination agreement, the mezzanine deed of trust has been subordinated and moved to the end of the priority chain. Your Honors, that is subordination. Now, the second thing to note about this particular page is that despite the admitted change in the priority of the mezzanine deeds of trust, the construction lenders are seeking to elevate a portion of their construction deed of trust and to be substituted into the prior position of the mezzanine deeds of trust. This, Your Honors, is subrogation, not subordination. Subrogation into the place of a prior lien holder is an equitable remedy in the state of Nevada. Now, Your Honors, this case factually is directly on point with the Oldstone cases out of the state of Georgia. In Oldstone, the Georgia courts held that when a complete subordination is given, the first lien holder has agreed to move its lien behind the subordinated lien. The Georgia courts also noted that the subordination agreement, just like the subordination agreement in this case, did not contain any language that would allow for a switch of priority through subrogation. And finally, the Georgia courts held, just as this court held in Fontenberg, that allowing a party to jump in front of a known mechanics lien claimant would destroy the legal rights given to the mechanics lien claimants by statute. At its heart, this case is nothing more than an extension of the court's holdings in Fontenberg. In Fontenberg, this court started by finding that the mechanics lien laws of the state of Nevada are exclusive to this state. And as part of that was finding that other states' interpretations of equitable subrogation didn't apply in light of Nevada mechanics lien laws. The court also noted that the purpose behind the mechanics lien law was to protect vulnerable contractors. After recognizing these concepts, the court held that the Nevada legislature specifically provided that mechanics lien claimants are provided with priority over any encumbrance or mortgage imposed after commencement of construction. This court further held that principles of equity cannot overcome the express statutory provisions, such as the priority provided in NRS 108.225.
But counsel, isn't there a significant distinction? The priorities that occurred in this case predated the mechanics liens.
The priority,
making the comparison to Fontainebleau is a bit of a stretch, isn't it?
No, Your Honor, I don't think it is a stretch at all, and here's why. The only difference is that the liens in this case were not released. However, they were clearly, as recognized by Scott, as recognized by the district court, and as argued by our side as well, the liens of the prior mezzanine deeds of trust were moved behind the construction deed of trust. So rather than pay it off, they moved it to the back, which in essence saved them some money because they didn't have to come up with the funding.
The mechanics lien claimants acquire a windfall, which is quite a bit different analysis than Fontainebleau.
Well, Your Honor, and I don't think it's a difference because the windfall argument, first off, windfall is an equitable argument. And the court found in Fontainebleau
that they were dealing with equitable subrogation. And here we're dealing with legal concepts involving partial and full subordination, which are contractual problems.
No, Your Honor, and I'll tell you why. is because contractually, and I think this goes to the Blickenstaff case that came out of the Supreme Court of Idaho, where the Supreme Court of Idaho said, a first lien holder has the right and the ability to place its lien behind another lien. But what a first lien holder cannot do is elevate a third position lien over a second position lien without permission of that second lien holder. And that's exactly what we're trying to do here. They're trying to say that they have contracted for a switch in priority, which can only be accomplished by subrogation, not subordination.
Again, but if the jurisprudence surrounding partial and full subordination is adopted by this court and analyzed in accordance with those cases, what is the prejudice to the mechanics lien claimants where the amount of the prior lien is simply substituting the name of the individual who has it as opposed to the amount?
Well, first off, Your Honor, is I think that you're overcoming the statutory preference of NRS 108.225.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying is that by agreement, without permission of the lien claimants, somehow the construction lender is able to elevate its priority despite the fact that it recorded its construction
lien amount
8 months after the
mechanics. But if the amount in priority and the terms, interest rates, payment terms are the same, what is the prejudice to the mechanics lien claimant?
Your Honor, on that point, there's exactly no difference between this case and Fontainebleau. That is equitable subrogation, Your Honor. You said that by payment of the prior lien, you get to step in on the same terms of the loan, the same interest rates, the same payment terms. That's the exact result we're seeking here. And the court found that as a result of the mechanics lien statutes, you can't do that. That's equity, Your Honor. You can't do it by agreement. You can't do it by statute. The only way you get there is through equitable means, and that equitable mean is subrogation. Now, while this is slightly different in
it only occurs
subrogation. I'm sorry,
Your Honor. It only occurs by contract. It only occurs by contract between the first lien holder and the subsequent lien holder.
It's not
so the mechanics lien claimants in this case get a windfall? Is that the deal?
No, Your Honor. It's not a windfall. And I don't understand.
Why should you be elevated to the first lien position on a property when you did nothing and no one altered your position in the process?
The only reason that we were altered is because there was an agreement between the first and the third to take the first and move it behind the third.
And nothing
and the third had reasons to do that.
And nothing in that process impaired your security before the agreement.
But what it does is it allows a third party to leapfrog, in spite of the statutory scheme, the explicit statute, the explicit priority provided by 108.225, and to jump us. And the point is, this is really no different. In fact, the construction lenders, who would be the party achieving the result here? That's where the windfall comes in, Your Honor. The windfall comes in when a party, knowing that there's mechanics lien work going on, knowing that they're in front of them, somehow tries to find a way to elevate themselves in front of that mechanics lien when they knew that they should be behind in priority pursuant to NRS 108.225. This isn't a matter of the mezzanine deeds of trust ever getting payment. They are not getting paid. This is a dispute between the mechanics liens and the construction lenders who loaned, knowing the mechanics liens were there, who loaned, knowing that work had been ongoing for 8 months. That's where the prejudice is. There's no prejudice to either of these parties. These are the positions they found themselves in. Yes, we were behind the first. Well, they're behind the first and the second. Now, they're still behind us in the exact same position they were in. So, Your Honor, I think it is essentially the same as Fontainebleau. In this case,
Do you want to reserve the remaining amount of your time?
I thought I'd already reserved 4 minutes.
You're consuming it, but
yes,
I'll add a minute to your time.
I appreciate you. I thought the clock was consuming.
That's okay.
I missed an up.
That's all right.
No so, yes, thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Justice Hardesty, members of the panel. I'm Bill Maupin with Lionel Sawyer and Collins, and I've been asked to argue the position today on behalf of Scott Financial. Let's go to the argument as it's been made thus far. We admit nothing in terms of other than there was a subordination between the mezzanine lenders and the construction lenders. Now, what they're talking about is the effect of it. But make no mistake about this. There is the landowners in this case must lose this case because the subordination agreement does absolutely nothing to harm them. It does nothing to prejudice their priority in the case. It has no effect on them. From before the subordination occurred, and it was recorded in February 7, 2008, and then afterwards. They also, in a legal sense, must lose this case. Because a complete subordination here, where they become in first position, is a substantial benefit to them. They go from second to first, and in this case is very important because of the net effect. There isn't enough money to either pay all the mechanics liens off if they're in first position, and there isn't enough money to pay off a lender if they're in the first position, the way this has worked out.
They have asserted that based on statutory construct, permission must be given before the switch can take place.
Well, that does not square with the doctrinal construct that we're asking the court to embrace today, which is in the Caterpillar case. This isn't a matter of permission. This is a matter of two parties agreeing to realign their priorities and what the net effect that is on the second, the intervening position. And going to the Fontainebleau case, Fontainebleau basically talks about the important public policy considerations behind the lien statute. It's probably never been better stated. But there has to be some, under Fontainebleau, there has to be some effect on the lien priority. This transaction did nothing of the kind. And under our laws of intended third-party beneficiaries, this just can't happen. These two parties, in a normal transaction, by the way, it's not normal for the land acquisition financing or initial development financing to subordinate to new construction financing. And that's what happened here. And if this is partial subordination, then simply stated, the construction financing in this case simply swaps priority position. There's no assignment, there's no purchase, there's no refinance here. That might be subrogation, but there's no subrogation here. The mechanics lien claimants, by the way, in the Fontainebleau case, were parties to the subordination agreement. They're not parties to the subordination agreement. And if they remain in the same place where they started, in second place, to the extent and they're behind $38 million, not the entire $110 million, then there is absolutely no change in their position. But this is a substantial benefit for them to go into first place, a substantial benefit. And under our laws of intended third-party beneficiaries, the parties to the contract must clearly state their intent to benefit the third party. Now, you can look at this subordination agreement. You can read it from beginning to end. You can flip it in front of a mirror and read it backwards. You can stick it in an Enigma machine. And maybe it's encrypted or somewhere in code. But if you can find a specific reference to the mechanic liens holder's priorities in this case, you must grant the petition. But it's not there, so you must, under our rules of intended third-party beneficiaries, you must deny the petition.
Well, I'm not sure the analysis ends there, though. If the court were to adopt the concept of partial or full subordination, we would then examine the contract to determine whether, as at least one of the judges, Judge Delaney, did in this case, whether or not the contract as interpreted resulted in full subordination or partial subordination.
And that is exactly why we're here. The descriptives, complete subordination versus partial subordination, are really a descriptive of result and what the contract actually does. And these are real terms. This has got to be some sort of, there's got to be an objective intent that the party of the contract has to be enforced according to its subjective intent. By the way, it's a problem. They're arguing rules of contractual construction as between parties to an agreement. They're not parties to this agreement. And the only parties to this agreement are the two syndicates of lenders. The point that is really at stake here is this agreement is silent on any percentage priority change or anything else with regard to the mechanics lien holders. They are seizing on one clause in the contract that the recordation of one is treated to follow the recordation of the other. But that's in the context of a very elaborate description of the subordination arrangement between the construction lenders and the original acquisition and development lenders.
But, Mr. Poppin, if we were to adopt this approach, say the court or this panel were to adopt the reasoning in Bratcher, the rule there is to determine the objective intent of the parties to the agreement, not in relationship to the mechanics lien holders, but in relationship to each other. When you examine this contract, it is of concern to me that the subordination agreement amounts to what would be viewed as a full subordination, not a partial subordination. How should the court analyze the contractual provisions as between these parties where it appears to result, at least as one judge found, to call for full subordination?
Well, first of all, if this is a complete subordination, then you have turned the law of third-party beneficiary, intended third-party beneficiary status, on its head. Because it would have to, by implication, mean that there was an intent to flip the priorities of a third party. That's nowhere stated in here other than in relation to the subordination arrangement. Now also, in paragraphs 10 and 11 of the subordination agreements, it says the agreement shall not be construed as affecting the priority of any liens or encumbrances in favor of SFC on the trust property. Now, I'm not saying that that says it precludes the benefit to a third party, but it doesn't say that there's a benefit. And then it says, this agreement shall be construed according to the laws of the state of Nevada and shall be binding upon and inure to the benefit of SFC, its participants, their successors, and assigns. Now, it doesn't say this contract inures to the benefit of any third party, but it does say it inures to the benefit of the parties. And if this is a complete subordination agreement, then what the law will be that silence or even ambiguity on the question of a third party's lien presumes a benefit that is nowhere objectively stated in the contract. And I think that's the answer to your question. And what happens here is that you have a doctrine in Lipschitz that basically says if two parties to an agreement are to benefit a third, it has to be clearly stated. And that marries perfectly with the Caterpillar case that we supplied with our supplemental points and authorities. And I think that probably describes how this case should come out as well as anything. again, silence doesn't mean the conference of a benefit, conferring a benefit. It means that the status quo with regard to the priorities remains the same with this swapping of priority, but only again to the extent to which the subordinating party was secured by a prior deed of trust. And here's what they say. By the way, I'm reluctant to read, but it's a very brief analysis. It distills 160 pages of briefs in this case, two conflicting district court opinions, and hundreds of documents that have been attached and analyzed into a couple of pages and just a few paragraphs. Courts disagree on how a subordination agreement affects priorities if the agreement does not say. Some cases, opting for what is called complete subordination, drops the subordinating creditor to the bottom of the priority ladder. In this case, that would make the lien holders first, the construction lien holders second, and the acquisition and development lien holders third. I'm paraphrasing Judge Posner. That benefits a non-party to the subordination agreement. And here's the $64,000 question for those of us who remember that show. That benefits a non-party to the subordination agreement. And why would the parties to such an agreement want to do that? Going on with Caterpillar. The majority approach to subordination agreements, which goes by the name partial subordination, subordination. Simply swaps the priorities of the parties to the subordination agreement. And in this case, Scott as construction lender, up to $38 million. The lien claimants then, the construction lenders after that, above $38 to the $110, and then the mezzanine lenders in excess of the $38. One, two, three, four. And guess what? The mechanics lien holders never end up in any different position than they were before all this business. And that is why there is no tension between an agreement like this and the Fontainebleau case. And I believe footnote 13 in Fontainebleau addresses this possibility. Remington Trust had all the means to minimize its financial risk through the proper channels of contractual subordination. This is a teaser. It may be something for this court to address. But again, there is no circumstance under this doctrine where the lien holders, the mechanics lien holders, end up in any different position than they were before. This is strictly a third-party intended beneficiary case, in my view. And the rule of Caterpillar, written by probably one of the smartest judges I've ever lived, Judge Posner, basically embraces the notion that silence does not imply an unstated increase of rights. Now, I have to say that this is one of my favorite subjects, of course, is what is the effect of Rule 54B on the motion to rehear? Well, I don't even know if there's a 54B problem, but it is inherent in the trial process that the trial judge at any time can correct an error if the judge perceives that there is an error. Now, in this case, you have Judge 1 that comes to conclusion A. You have Judge 2 that comes to conclusion B. But the second judge has the right, if he or she believes, in this case, she, that the first decision is wrong. And even if there had not been an interdepartmental transfer, there would still be the right to do that. If I may just conclude. No one wanted this construction loan to go through more than their clients, as it enabled this project to go forward. This type of financing, as a matter of public policy, should be encouraged and not literally eviscerated by some notion that silence in a contract between two parties gives substantial rights to anyone else. Thank you very much.
All right. Mr. Malcolm, Mr. Carter.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I think the best question to answer is, why would they do this? And in order to answer that question, we kind of have to think about the position the construction lenders were in February 7th, 2008. What position were they in? Construction work had been ongoing for 8 months. They were already going to be behind the construction lenders. Now, would they want a loan against being behind potentially construction mechanics liens, or would they want the loan and be behind on $46 million mezzanine deed of trust? Well, they're already behind the mechanics liens, so what can they do? They can remove that $46 million through the subordination agreement and thereby protect themselves. And now they are in the exact same position as if the mezzanine deed of trust never existed. They're behind the construction lenders, they're not prejudiced, and they're not harmed. They're in the same position they would be in without the mezzanine deeds of trust. And that's what they did. That's why they did this. And there was also a benefit to the mezzanine deeds of trust. They got the funds to build this project so that they could get paid back. And their principal, Gary Thelson, got a $5 million fee to guarantee the construction loan every year that this construction loan was out. This was an economic transaction that benefited all the parties, and that's what they wanted to do. And it benefits the construction lenders by removing a large lien that would have been in front of them, leaving only the mechanics liens in front of them. That's what subordination agreements do. Now, Your Honor, there was a lot of discussion over the third-party beneficiary argument. That's simply not really an appropriate argument in this case, and here's why. Because this agreement was recorded, and this recorded agreement, which provides public notice, Scott said, SFC has agreed and hereby intends to evidence that the mezzanine deeds of trust and the indebtedness shall be subordinated to the $10 million senior deed of trust. They intended to evidence to the public that they wanted this lien treated as if it was recorded after the other lien. And the final point, Your Honor, is again, this case is complete subordination, and to say otherwise is just simply burying your head in the sand. This agreement completely subordinates every interest of the priority, every interest of payment behind the construction deed of trust, Your Honors. And I think Fountain Blue is conclusive of this case. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments and briefs in this case. The matter will stand.